Okay, I think we can start. Thanks everybody for joining us today for yet another of the recent seminars of the Hellenic Observatory. Today we're talking about the Greek economy, the trajectory from crisis to sustainable growth, and we have with us two very good friends of the Hellenic Observatory and people who know a thing or two about the Greek economy and about economic growth more generally. Our, I think, second speaker is immediately to my left, Anthony Bartzokas, who is a professorial fellow at the United Nations University of Maastricht in the Economic and Social Research Institute on Innovation and Technology. He's visiting professor in practice here at the LSE and an associate professor, and an associate professor at the University of Athens. He's formerly been a board member at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. And during his fellowship here at the Hellenic Observatory, Professor Bartzokas is working on a number of projects, one of which is on the political economy of macroeconomic adjustment in Greece, and this links to the work that we're going to hear on today. There's also some other work that we're going to have the opportunity for future events sometime later in the future. We'll start, however, with the first presenter, Peter Samphy, who's Deputy Director for an Acting Director now, as I heard before, Country Economics and Policy within the Economics, Policy and Governance Department of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. Between 2017 and 2020, he was also Senior Visiting Fellow at our sister unit, LISI, the LSE Research on Southeast Europe group here at LSE. Peter has a BA in Economics from Trinity College Dublin and a PhD in Economics from Yale. He was lecturer in Economics at the University of Canterbury before joining the EBRD, but he's been in the EBRD for a very long time and been involved in a lot of both its operations and activities in the EBRD region, including Greece, but also in occasionally at least in the EBRD transition report. The work that I'm going to present today has an inevitable focus on the kind of the old news about the Greek dysfunctionalities of the Greek economy and the problems, but we're focusing more on the trajectory from the crisis to sustainable growth, which is kind of the big question that policy has to address both in Greece but also perhaps more at the European level. Before I pass the floor to our speakers, just a couple of housekeeping announcements. If you're using the Twitter or X, the hashtag for the event is hashtag LSE Greece, one word. The event is being recorded, and if there's no any technical hiccups, it will become available as a podcast in a few days. And we'll have the presentation pretty much for around 40-45 minutes, and then we'll be opening up for a Q&A, for a discussion on the themes that will be covered. But however, I've asked the speakers before, so if there's any urgent technical or clarifying questions, please feel free to interrupt and politely and ask your question. Okay, that was all my introductory remarks. We can then stay quiet and pass the floor to Peter.
Let me stand up, actually, and firstly say thank you very much, Vasilis, Areti, Kevin, everyone at the Hellenic Observatory. It's a great pleasure to be invited here for both Anthony and myself, and I hope we have a good discussion tonight. So please jump in with points along the way and also after Anthony and I have spoken. I want to say a little bit first about the background to this work. So Anthony and I have a shared background at the EBRD, and that's, as Vasilis would say, that's the institution where I still work. Anthony was a member of the board of directors for a number of years until a couple of years ago. And we, you know, we found we had a lot of shared interests there. We did a couple of papers together, which we presented at conferences. And about 5 or 6 years ago, we thought it would be good to write something a little bit more substantial about Greece and about how Greece, not another book about how Greece got into a crisis, but more forward-looking, how Greece might actually get out of the crisis sustainably and build a long-term prosperous future. And we wanted to give this work naturally a kind of EBRD flavor, by which I mean we wanted really to focus on the role of private sector and investment in driving the recovery. I should say, of course, that anything we say tonight and anything that will be in the book will be the personal views of Anthony and myself and have nothing to do with the EBRD. But our work is very much influenced by our time there. You'll see that when I present some of the initial kind of findings of the book, which of course is still very much in preparation. And by the way, it's not only in preparation, but we do very much welcome the ideas tonight, which, if they are good ones, will get featured in the book with the appropriate attribution. So this was some years ago. We then COVID hit. We kind of held back a bit. We also, you know, we started doing different things ourselves. So the book got a bit delayed, but we are pretty much firmly back on track now and hoping to really wrap it up in the coming weeks and send it off to the publishers. And we felt, you know, back in 2019, 2020, that was probably a good time to look at Greece going forward into a prosperous future. Then COVID kind of, you know, threw everything into a turmoil. But we now feel, from the perspective of some early 2024, that this is also a propitious time to look again at the medium to long term future of Greece. So let me tell you first our main messages. I think that the first two messages, probably nobody will disagree with, that firstly the economic situation is improving, and I'll show just a few charts to kind of give you a little flavor of that. But that there are still some quite deep-rooted business environment problems, which, notwithstanding the progress of the last 5-6 years post-program, have not gone away. And as a result, Greece does still lag behind the EU on what we call desirable qualities of a sustainable market economy. And I'm going to explain in a little bit what we mean by desirable qualities. So we think that there is now a good opportunity, particularly in light of all the external support available for Greece, and I'm thinking here especially the RRF, the Recovery and Resilience Facility funds. There is a really unique opportunity now for Greece to take advantage of this and really move up decisively onto a sustainable trajectory. And this sustainable trajectory is very much built around investment, productivity, and trade, that nexus, which we think is vital for long-term sustainable growth, allied to a revamp of policy capacity to deliver the reforms necessary for the growth. So those are our main messages of tonight and of the book. And in terms of the outline, so I'm going to talk about sections 1, 2, 3, a little bit about the economic situation. Section 2 on some results from an enterprise survey that we at the EBRD did jointly. We do the survey a few years jointly with the World Bank and also with the European Investment Bank, which give us a bit of a flavor of the business environment problems that Greece faces. And then I'll talk about this desirable qualities approach that we've been using the EBRD for quite some years now to look at how market economies are doing and where they lag behind best practice competitors. And then I'll hand over to Anthony, who will talk about the drivers of sustainable economic growth. Okay, so very quickly about the economic situation. I think we don't need to dwell on this. The growth rates you're I think probably very familiar with, the fairly modest recovery in the later years of the programs, 2017, 2018, the big drop in COVID in 2020, and then the very strong bounce back in 21, sustained into 2022. 23, we don't know yet the final figures, but we were forecasting 2.4%. I think it's probably going to be in that ballpark. And our current forecast at the EBRD for 24 is 2.3%, which I think is, again, broadly in line with most other forecasters. But we can come back if you have different views on the growth prospects in the short term. We can come back to that maybe in the discussion. And I think, I'm often asked to talk to investors because EBRD is now an investor in Greece. And the kind of things I'd say, well, you know, unemployment has fallen slightly. It was at one point 25%. It actually dropped, according to one measure at least, dropped briefly into single figures at the end of last year, although I see it's ticked up slightly in January. But that's, you know, steady fall. I think there's been fiscal responsibility really from the third program onwards. So this is not just something that New Democracy brought in, but actually the previous Syriza government, I think, did quite well in terms of eliminating fiscal deficits and delivering primary surpluses year after year. Again, not during COVID, of course, but now primary surpluses have returned, and that's, of course, important for long-run debt sustainability. Business confidence is holding up well. We look at this indicator of Purchasing Manager Index, which is a widely used index of business confidence. It basically looks at whether businesses are expecting to expand or not. And it's held up pretty well in recent years. It has dropped a bit from the height in 21 and 22, but you can see it's holding up quite well in 2023, as is overall economic sentiment. So a score above 100 is an indication of improving economic sentiment, and you can see that it's been well above 100 in the past year. Those are the kind of things you can tell a story, and the government, of course, is quite good at telling a story about how they're, you know, transforming the economy. But if you want to look at the downside, you can look at the emerging current account deficit. So we saw during the crisis, at least once the fiscal accounts were under control and the current account also, the deficit was more or less eliminated. But it came back with a bit of a vengeance in 2022, deficit of more than 10% of GDP, and a bit of a reduction last year, but still quite high. So that, I think, points to, and Anthony will take this theme up later, points to the difficulties in really building a strong export-led growth. And the other thing that I think is worth pointing out is that consumers are still quite pessimistic. So here you see the monthly consumer confidence indicator. Again, this is Eurostat data. And compared with the EU, actually Greece is pretty much the lowest, I think, EU, and has dropped quite significantly in the last six or seven months. And so that, I think, is a sign, a warning sign that people still don't quite, you know, believe yet that this confidence is, that this recovery is really there sustainably for the future. So it's a little bit of a mixed picture. Now, what I want to move to now is to talk a little about our business survey results. So this survey is one that we carried out in the sort of early post-program period. So you remember that the third economic adjustment program ended in August 2018. So it was the first of the programs to actually finish, you know, successfully, run to completion and be finished properly. So this survey was carried out in the aftermath of that, late 2018 and the first half of 2019. It's a, some of you may have heard of the BEEPS before. The BEEPS stands for Business Environment and Enterprise Performance Survey. It's a survey that has been running since 1999 by the EBRD and World Bank across a whole range of countries. This enterprise survey is the successor to BEEPS, if you like. We brought in the EIB as a partner. So it's carried out in many countries. In Greece, so it was at that time, it's a random sample of 600 firms, so representative sample of Greece's private sector. And it's a very detailed survey of senior owners or managers of businesses with a whole range of questions about their activities, but also about their perceptions of the quality of the business environment they face in their day-to-day environment. So I always say in presenting BEEPS, you know, this is not us sitting in London and pontificating, but it's about businesses on the ground who are telling us about what the situation really is. And a lot of the questions are about the obstacles. So here's an example of a question that businesses are asked. To what degree is corruption an obstacle to the current operations? You can answer on a 5-point scale from no obstacle to very severe obstacle. And there's a separate question which asks you to list the biggest obstacle. But if we take this these topic-by-topic questions, you can then combine the results. This may be a little bit difficult to read, but I'll just point to the these columns here, you know, percentage saying major obstacle or very severe obstacle. And the ones that stand out are, if you look down here, tax administration and tax rates. I mean, more than half the sample said the tax rates at the time were a very severe obstacle. For example, political instability at the time was also very important for many respondents. Lost the red thing when it's gone. And things like access to electricity was problematic, access to finance, and corruption also cited by many respondents. Now, we've done a little bit of analysis, and we'll be presenting this in the book. I'm just going to touch on it briefly here about which obstacles are more important for which type of businesses. So the way to do this, very skimming over this very quickly, is to basically run a regression where we treat these answers on the cost of doing business as kind of the revealed cost. This is what businesses are revealing to us. And we regress it on the characteristics of the firm. So that's what that regression is saying there. So the results are something like this. Again, not legible probably from the back or even from the front. But basically, let me tell you what we think are some of the most interesting findings. So firstly, innovating firms. Now, there are a number of firms which are quite forward-looking in Greece. They are, looking to do things differently. This comes out of the survey. And they are the ones who I think will be critical for Greece's long-term growth prospects. And they are particularly concerned about things like customs regulations, labor regulations, about the inadequately educated workforce. So you saw unemployment is down to around 10%, but actually, according to some estimates, that's not too far away from full employment, because a lot of, you know, a lot of businesses are actually struggling to find people with the right education to do the jobs. And this is particularly true for innovating firms. The court system also, a long-standing problem in Greece, functioning of the courts or non-functioning of the courts, and it's something that these types of firms complain about too. Exporting firms, well, it's locally oriented firms that find it more difficult to navigate tax administration, licensing, corruption, and those problems. Yes?
If I am allowed to ask, I mean, does Greece score high? You say that there are lots of other countries in this equivalent survey. Is Greece scoring higher or worse on these counts than elsewhere? Or other ones scoring differently on something else?
Yeah, so good question. In short, it tends to score worse than the typical EU countries, but better than obviously countries further east and so on. But what I'm going to go on to now quickly, and then I'll hand over to Anthony, is the this desirable qualities framework. So this framework is something that we developed at the EBRD about 7 or 8 years ago. It's a way of looking at economies where you think, you start off by asking yourself, what would you like a well-functioning economy to have? And we characterize these economies along 6 qualities. So we think a good economy would be competitive, well-governed, green, inclusive, resilient to shocks, and integrated. And we've developed a methodology to score countries on a scale of 1 to 10 on each of these qualities. It's very much a data-driven approach. So we're like magpies. We draw data from wherever we can find it and input it into this index that we construct for each of these qualities using best quality data, the most up-to-date data as much as we can find. And we can then benchmark that against best practice against the most advanced OECD countries. So if you see where Greece stands, we don't do all EU countries, but we do basically the countries where we invest in the EU. And we have a few comparative countries which are up in the top, like Sweden, Germany, UK, a former EU country, and France, you know, which tend to have the highest scores. So if you look at the average score on the right-hand side, they're the ones that stand out. Greece, you know, is scoring below pretty much all the countries from Central and Eastern Europe that joined the EU back in 2004. They are above the countries that joined later, so Bulgaria, Romania, and Croatia, but it is below these other countries. Now, the individual scores are there. I don't have time. I'm going to stop in a couple of minutes and hand to Anthony. But just to quickly show a couple of... Well, first to say that Greece has improved since 2016, and actually the rate of improvement is a bit quicker than in some of these other, say, southern European countries. So that, I think, is something that's encouraging. But nevertheless, there's still... In our analysis, there are still big gaps to overcome. This is going to be what, you know, Anthony will talk about this. This is what, you know, is going to hold back, I think, unless these things are addressed, it's going to hold back the investment, productivity, and exports. Kevin.
So, can you just go back to the previous slide?
Yeah.
Could you just give us a sense of how you measure your inclusivity?
Okay, well, let me show you a chart, actually. So we have a chart for each one. I think in the interest of time, I'm just going to skip over these.
Yeah, okay. Don't.
Yeah, no. Well, okay, so one by one then. Competitiveness. What we've done here is take just a little selection of indicators. Now, competitiveness, I think, has 20 or 30 indicators. But here are some where Greece, which is the blue bar, is significantly behind the EU 15. So complexity index, which is taken from the Harvard Hausmann, where competition policy index, again, Greece lags behind. To kind of sum it up in the heading, you know, it's the lack of complexity and dynamism, which I think shows that Greece is less competitive on average than the EU. Governance is a particular weakness of Greece, and it's things like courts, you know, the enforcement of contracts, for example, the middle one, you see a big gap there, perceptions of corruption. Freedom of media actually is something also that is important. So, and these, to go back to your question about where Greece stands on BEEF, some of these indicators are drawn from our enterprise surveys, so they, you know, they do feed into this analysis as well. Green challenges, I think, are pretty big, and we know that from, you know, anyone going to Greece knows that there really are big issues to address in terms of climate change and in terms of some of these more detailed indicators of sustainability. And Kevin, going to your question about inclusion, so this would be things like, so by inclusion, we usually look at three dimensions. So there's gender, there's youth, and there's regional. You know, so you can be held back in life by, you know, gender. We know there's still male-female gaps, and these like wages and so on. You can get held back if you're young because, you know, youths often have struggled to, you know, they often start visiting more senior workers and so on. And you can be held back if you're in a rural area as opposed to a more urban one. So things like connectivity are important. So having proper broadband, Greece really scores quite poorly relative to the EU average in terms of how much it costs to get a fixed broadband. But things like training, labor force participation rate is quite low in Greece relative to others. We have some data sets on equal treatment and absence of discrimination, but again, EU is below Greece is below the EU average. Yeah.
So can you briefly elaborate on how you estimate the indices? Like, from what I understand, that you might go to the national statistical agencies for each country,
yeah,
and you have these big data sets about enterprises that have different variables.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you use that and you create an algorithm to create those?
Exactly. That's kind of a nutshell. I mean, there is a big data, there's a methodological description on our website which says exactly how we did it, but basically you've described the essence of it, which is to take a lot of different data sets, to assign weightings to them, and then you know a formula then calculates.
And once you do that for all countries, is it easy actually to compare that? Like, there should be standards from the Eurostat, like how you compile information for each country in terms of enterprises. But once you compile the indices for all countries, then you can safely compare the produced indices across countries? Or you think there are some disbalances between how each country reports?
That's a good question, because sometimes you don't have quite comparable data sets for different countries. So you do have to, so there is an element of judgment and artistry in constructing these, but to the extent that we can eliminate those kind of judgments, we do it with this. You know, I've been at the EBRD a long time, as Vasilis mentioned. I remember the old days we had what we call transition indicators, which were very judgment-based. We had some data, but we had to, you used your judgment as an economist to, following these countries and so on. We've tried to eliminate that to the extent possible, but for the reasons that you've alluded to, you sometimes have to make assumptions and make judgments. So lastly, so resilience, we look at financial sector resilience and energy, and obviously the financial sector increase is in a much stronger position than it was even 5 or 10 years ago, but it's still, I think there's still aspects of it that still need to be watched carefully, let's say. And a big theme of what Anthony's going to talk about, the trade and the FDI, again, the indicators put Greece below the EU averages as well. So in the book, we will be, setting out what I've tried to do, very briefly here, setting out the kind of framework, the broad macro picture, which is certainly improving and looking much better than it was, but still with weaknesses. The business environment, which again is improving as well, and we will be reflecting some of the recent changes, which were maybe not captured by the survey, but still there are a lot of deep-rooted obstacles that the businesses have to face day to day. And these then feed into the six qualities framework, which I think shows some of the gaps between Greece and where they would like to be in the EU. Anthony, I'm going to stop there and hand over to you to take us on to the more forward-looking where Greece goes from here. And this is for you.
Thank you, Peter. And many thanks to Vasilis, Kevin, and all the people at the observatory. I mean, for me, it has been a great opportunity to be hosted here and set aside a few days to think about, what really matters for the future of the Greek economy. Let me start with an overview. I mean, when you start thinking about forward-looking issues on the Greek economy, it is very important to try to understand what is the state of the debate. And I would say there are three lines in the current debate in Greece now that the dust has settled about what happened, etc. The first line is what we might call back to normality. There are people who think that, if Greece will return to the benchmarks of the Greek economy in 2008, that's fine. I think the value added of this approach is very limited, primarily for two reasons. First, they overlook composition effects. I mean, investment being 20% of GDP can mean everything and nothing. And this is the case of this argument. So one problem is composition. Second problem is that this line of arguing really overlooks what happened during the 10 years of the crisis and the scarring effect over the crisis. There are two other lines which are more promising, I would say. The first is the line of reforms. In simplistic terms, this is a very linear approach. It suggests that if you do reforms, you have growth. But of course, some of the academics who are arguing for this line of forward-looking perspective for the Greek economy are much more sophisticated. And what they do is they look at the scarring effect of the Greek economy and they try to introduce priorities of the reform process. The problem with this line of arguing about the future is that they tend to overlook policy capacity in Greece. The third line of argument is about rebalancing. These people are basing very much in a path-dependent universe in a way. They also absorb the problems of scarring in the Greek economy in the last 10 years. But for them, scarring effects are really arguments for a massive rebalancing of the Greek economy and a massive reallocation of resources. The problem with this approach is that they tend to overlook implementation, how that can work. As you can see in the book, we try to engage in a conversation with the second and the third approach. And in order to do that, we do two very simple things, two very practical things. First, we argue that we are now 5 years after the crisis, so we have evidence of how things evolved, and we need to take stock of that. And second, we suggest that the opportunity for Greece to reach out a sustainable growth path has a certain time horizon, 8 to 10 years. So all the arguments about forward-looking perspectives need to be practical. So this is an introduction. How we engage in conversation with the second and third approach. We look at four pillars, four drivers for sustainable growth. Investment, productivity, exports, policy capacity. And our understanding is that we look at facts, but also we try to challenge the reliability of the arguments vis-a-vis a very specific time frame. Let me start with investment. Here, I mean, in 15 minutes I can just give you a teaser of what is in the book, yeah? And perhaps this is a nice way to do it. Okay, what is happening in terms of investment in the Greek economy? First, the profile, the composition of investment has improved. We have a substantial increase of FDI, but even now we have persistent obstacles, binding constraints for investment. Access to capital is not a problem anymore for large corporates, and COVID has been an opportunity to refocus incentives in Greece for green transition and digitalization. You can see that capital depletion gradually is phasing out. You cannot read it here, but if you look at the percentages, you can see that fixed capital investment is gradually moving to tradables, industry, but also tradable services. There's a lot of debate, sometimes political debate in Greece, about FDI. You see here how things are evolving. FDI is substantial and gradually is moving to manufacturing and ICT. Not to the extent that people would wish to see, but it is happening. Then in the book, we utilize a second data set, which is the EIB data set on constraints for investment. And there you see some very interesting findings that new binding constraints are emerging in the Greek economy when you compare the middle of the crisis and recent years. And these are energy skills digitalization, And you can go deeper and see how things evolved during the crisis and after the crisis at the sectoral level. And we have done that. The second driver which we are looking at is productivity. Our analysis focuses on structural obstacles and opportunities. And here we come up with some concrete policy proposals because, as I said before, time frame is very important for the analysis that we put forward. Starting point, productivity is lagging behind other crisis countries. Business demographics are in bad shape still. Capital utilization is a very important side effect of what happened during the crisis with NPLs, but also the abandoning of productive activities in Greece. ICT adoption across the board is problematic, and when you compare it to the EU average, you see that it is not building up at the strength that somebody would like to see. Third driver, exports. Again, our analysis looks at what happened and what needs to be done. Again, with a very specific time frame. This is a very important driver for our analysis, but also for anybody who is talking about a forward-looking perspective for Greece. Why? Because if you look at the core of the adjustment program, export orientation was really at the core of the analysis. Greece needed to rebalance and become more export-oriented. When we look post-crisis, we see that there are still problems, especially with concentration and destination. And that brings in the system vulnerabilities, as we have seen during the COVID crisis and tourism. A very interesting debate still ongoing about export in Greece is the problematic extensive margin. Many people have been writing about it, and I think it's still important to stress it because it is still there. Extensive margin is to what extent you discover new markets, and Greece paid a huge price during the crisis. Now it's starting to build up. In the book, we give some specific examples. We call them boxes. So we have, for example, when it comes to investment, we have a box on how corporates manage to issue corporate bonds. When it comes to productivity, we talk about data centers and how they flourished in Greece in recent years. When it comes to exports, we have, for example, the case of a specific policy action that started during the crisis and has been extremely successful. During the crisis, Greek policymakers discovered that they didn't have at their disposal trade finance instruments. And then IFI stepped in, EIB and then EBRD, and managed to solve the problem. Message given for exports, a critical issue for growth drivers in Greece, practical solutions are very important. Fourth point, policy capacity. There are two lines of empirical findings. One, political scientists have been arguing that during the crisis, policy capacity has been eroding in Greece. A second stream of empirical research is several assessment of policy instruments, implementation of policy instruments in the Greek economy. Same conclusion, more or less. And now the challenge comes. In the current time frame, which is 8 years, Greece will have to absorb a massive flow of resources. Investment incentives, but also, you know, resources to be channeled to green transition. The core problem of policy capacity is absorption. And we discussed this problem in the book in two areas. First, the RRF and its absorption, and second, green transition. For the RRF, we use the OECD analysis. We have looked backwards on how Greece has been absorbing national funds and how the Greek experience with EU funds compares with the ambitious commitment of RRF funding. Absorption is a real problem, also in the case of green transition, where you have important and massive commitments, and then you compare that with the, say, benchmarking of Greece and Greek potential to absorb the green transition trajectory, the problem of absorption comes back at stage. Final slide, if I have 3 more minutes. Five. At the end of the book, we put forward a policy capacity framework. Our policy capacity framework starts with three facts of life. The two massive investment programs in Greece right now, RRF and Green Transition, are being characterized by top-down priorities. This is a fact of life. Second, because of the scale and market conditions we discussed before, supply-side constraints are inevitable, a second fact of life. And third, fact of life is exogenous shocks will happen in any case. So, for the policymaker, our framework provides an objective starting point. These are the facts of life. Then we bring in international experience. When you have top-down policy priorities, the international best practice that you need to enhance and embed coordination and information sharing. When you have supply-side constraints, you need to speed up market-based solutions. When you are concerned about resilience, you need to develop policy capacity for self-correcting mechanisms in your policy process. How Greece compares with that? First point. The legacy of the crisis, as I said before, is delayed economic diversification and eroded policy capacity. Also, things like rule of law and how institutions work come very prominent. So first set of policy challenges. Second set of policy challenges when it comes to supply side constraints are the binding constraints we discussed before and regulatory uncertainty. As you have seen in the comparison between 2015 and 2020, uncertainty about regulatory trends is extremely important in recent years. And when it comes to the third challenge, sector vulnerabilities, low productivity sectors in Greece, and limited coordination of proliferating policy instruments is also a problem. At the end, we propose three sets of policy action corresponding to each one of the challenges. In a practical spirit and also in a kind of investment facilitating fashion that is really the inspiring dimension of the book itself. So for example, let's say that you really try to solve the top-down priorities in your investment program as a country and as a policy maker. One priority would be to develop a bottom-up agenda for market creation. What exactly I mean? I mean trade and reserves. And how solving the problem with customs and codification and all that can really speed up the process of business creation. Let's go to the second challenge. If indeed you have a problem with the supply of credit, you need to be transparent about who needs credit and who gets credit. And there we argue about an assessment of funding gaps, which is transparent and available to everybody. Another very interesting proposal that we have tested in other contexts and in other countries is the project upstream capacity. The Greek government has picked up this proposal, and they have an RRF project facilitation upstreaming facility, but that needs to be enhanced and, you know, become even more empowered in the context of Greece. Let's go to the third challenge. Indeed, if you foresee exogenous shocks, then you need to be more flexible with your priorities for the energy sector, for example, in order to preserve and enhance energy security. So all in all, we are in conversation with the reformers, we are in conversation with the rebalancing group in a way, but in a practical spirit and in a spirit that takes care of what came up after the crisis and what is the time horizon for Greece to build up a sustainable growth path.
Thank you both for the very, I think, interesting and stimulating presentation, but also keeping to the time. I thought, you know, 10 to 7, I'll tell you to start finishing, and you were exactly on time. So thanks both. Before I open up to the questions from the floor, I would like to ask a couple of things. I had a couple of kind of more, I don't know if difficult, but anyway, more substantive questions. But I would like you to, I'd like to start by asking for two, for elaborating on two of the points on this slide. Anthony, you mentioned the with, in relation to our project upstreaming facility, and then also for the SME's financial certification. So would you like to elaborate a bit on what are these and how they would actually you know, work to remove, I lost it now, you know, like to the credit constraints and the supply side constraints that we...
Okay. Let me start with the second, SME certification. Mm. We looked at the experience of Portugal, and there they had the same problem with the banking sector, very rigid filtering, a lot of rejections, etc. And then they thought, let's do something horizontal, which is that the government has introduced a program where every company will submit its financial statements, they're being assessed, and then they get a flag of being checked in a way. Mm-hmm. And this flag is updated every year. The banking sector is in agreement with the process and oversees the process. And then the selection filtering process is really reduced to almost nothing because, you know, they have the quality control in place. And it works very well. In Greece, it never happened. It is still a problem, SME access to credit and all that. And it's common sense to propose something like this. Your first question, upstreaming facility. Our proposal was to introduce an entity where they can start preparing project ideas to the extent that they pass the feasibility study and they are, you know, there for investors to pick up. With the Greek bureaucracy, this has been a difficult challenge, but it needs political support and empowerment to become more powerful and green. So this is the essence of the first proposal.
Okay, so let me then go to my more substantial question. So some, I mean, you know, like, you know, some of the audience here, at least one person in the audience, you know, come from a political science background, they would say that, you know, when you talk about reform capacity and state capacity, policy capacity, and so forth, you know, it's much deeper. It's not just, you know, as an economist would look at some sort of, you know, kind of issues of implementation, maybe information sharing, whatever. It's much more deeper issues, you know, that have to do with the kind of the sociology of the state, if you want, over decades and you know, the long journey, as well as, you know, how vested interests are organized, corruption, capture, you know, you name it. Different issues. So, you know, thinking about that, you know, even financial certification, how do I know that the state is not taking excessive risk by guaranteeing things that are not guaranteeable, or whatever is the term? Project upstreaming, that there's no kind of, well, both that there's no selection on the basis of their own criteria, but also does the state have the capacity to select, to apply the filters, you know, that would select the right project. So, if you think about sort of a solution to the policy capacity problem, is to implement things that would be implemented well in a high capacity place. In a way, it seems like the essence of the problem is still not addressed because these things will not work as effectively as if the problem wasn't there in the first place.
Okay, Yeah, that's a fair point. But, you know, we are not arguing for an ideal state apparatus. We're arguing for practical solutions. And sometimes when you have a malfunctioning administration, transparent information sharing can make a difference, for example. So actually we get inspiration from political scientists because a number of them have been arguing about how the crisis eroded policy capacity in Greece. So we take it for a fact, and in the analysis and in the proposals, we are really thinking about practical solutions. For example, you might say that, you know, responding to exogenous shocks is something very complicated. I would agree. But then I would argue that if you start thinking of a way to introduce a self-correcting process in your allocation of resources to the energy sector and building the system, this kind of provision, then that makes a difference. You see what I mean? You can, you know, look forward and introduce practical solutions, provided that the ideal state apparatus is not there, and in the time frame that we're concerned, which is less than 10 years, it is not going to happen in any case. Okay?
Okay, thanks. And I have a question for Peter, and then I will open it up. So please start studying your questions. Peter, so I don't know if it's anecdotally or actually there is data. Now, you also saw that there's an increase, I mean, the presentation showed that there was an increase, quite a robust increase in FDI in recent years. But semi-anecdotally, if there's a term like that, I think there's a lot of, not a lot, but some flagship big investments coming, you know, big multinationals, and they create new jobs, and they, I mean, I'm not saying that they don't really get embedded into the local ecosystem, but it doesn't seem like that's what they're doing. And we saw this kind of development with FDI in Central Eastern Europe. Again, our comparative political economists in our department were talking about dependent market economies where you have a duality, basically, you know, the local sector, which is, you know, surviving small businesses where they need clientelistic links in order to stay competitive, versus a kind of internationalized FDI kind of sector that have a lot of concessions in terms of regulation and labor standards, but actually otherwise they, you know, offer more job security, higher wages, and obviously the extra that it is, especially like when you're kind of EBRD hat. Do you think that this is a potential risk for Greece?
You mean the risk that the FDI
that has realized?
Yeah.
So the boat doesn't lift the small medium enterprises of Greece. Yeah.
It's a good question, so I'm not sure I have a good answer. So Andrew, please chip in if you want to. But I mean, when it comes to EBRD investments, so maybe I'll just say a little about that just for context, because anyone knows. So we have been investing in Greece since 2015. It was never envisaged when the EBRD was set up that we would invest in a country like Greece, but on a special case basis, and Anthony was the board director at the time steering this through, it was felt that the EBRD could have a role to help Greece get out of the crisis. And so we were given a 5-year mandate in Greece from 2015 to the end of 2020, similarly with Cyprus, actually, as well. Now Cyprus, we stopped in 2020, but Greece, an argument was made that we needed more time, that we still face major challenges, so it was agreed to extend the mandate till the end of 2025. And so we, since then, we've invested, I think it's something, Dimitris, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but something like 5.5 billion euros and cumulatively over the years, which of course mobilizes other investments since we always co-invest. Everything is in the private sector, and it's financed well over 100 projects. And we are also a formal partner with Greece for the recovery facilities. So 500 million of the big envelope of it's now, I think, 46 billion, is dedicated to projects co-financed with the EBRD in specific areas like green economy, digitalization. So those two are particular themes of focus for us. So in terms of, I mean, FDI is about taking equity stakes and of a broader investment in the economy. So with EBRD, we will always be looking at these spillover effects as part of our framework for looking at what we've traditionally called transition impact, trying to make sure that there are spillovers to the local economy. And we've combined that with a very active sort of advisory services for small businesses to help them develop. So there are ways, so I'm not saying the EBRD is totally transformative. We're not, you know, we're still in the bigger picture. You know, we're making a difference at the margin rather than, you know, being transformation for the economy. But there are ways, I think, of trying to ensure with investments that they do have these spillover effects for the rest of the economy. But whether other investors are doing that and whether the extent to which that is going on in other sectors, I don't know. I mean, we did have this chart on the different sectors FDI is going into, and some of them are more amenable then to spillover effects than others. Anthony, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, yeah. This is a very interesting question. First, I think if your question is about the potential of Greece to benefit from onshoring, then I see limited opportunities there. If the question is about foreign direct investment coming to Greece and targeting trade of the service, ICT, then I would say that, you know, these investments are skill intensive, and the real problem is how this is related to the brain drain from Greece. Because Google is coming in Greece, okay? And they are investing, and they are, you know, they are there to stay, but at the same time they absorb any remaining talent in the Greek economy. And then you have the local companies. They cannot offer the same salaries, and they cannot attract, you know, high caliber programmers anymore, because all of them go to Google. I think this is the real problem. Brain drain in the background, ICT coming because opportunities are arising, and then you have a displacement effect in the local market. Say, if a Greek company now will go out to hire, say, a sophisticated computer engineer, it's extremely difficult. Because, you know, new guys came in, they offer more attractive salaries and conditions, and, you know, they make the difference.
But I think, once again, it's not only Google and the ICT sector. You know, you see also consultants, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, you know, and you think, okay, you know, the domestic companies, which obviously much smaller scale, they don't have the capacity also to provide the training and provide the kind of career path that the big multinationals would have. So it does, in a way, feel like, okay, there's a threat there of some duality emerging, and what,
you know, I had a chart about digitalization. Okay. If you compare these to, you know, high-tech, sophisticated software companies coming in Greece, then you see the disconnect. I think this is the real problem.
Okay. Thank you. Opening it up. I'll take one question from here.
Thank you very much. It was a very interesting presentation. Two points very quickly. One is to follow up on this FDI point, I think, which is very interesting. I mean, it's obviously increasing, the volume of FDI and the volume of investment. My observation is that a significant amount of that, and I think one of your charts suggested this, is still going into real estate and tourism-related projects. And I think the real estate, and some of that is driven by big projects, such as Elimicon, for example, which EBRD was looking at one point, I know. So I think that the spillovers will be very limited from real estate investment. I mean, it's not bad necessarily. Some of it will be very good, but it's not necessarily productivity enhancing. So I guess the challenge is to make the leap from this form of FDI to that high-tech productivity enhancing activity driven by investment, and how to do that. and it probably also always comes back to the capacity issue, but I think also an infrastructure challenge as well. I think it was particularly transport-related infrastructure and energy infrastructure, as you've said already. A second point very quickly, I think one of the challenges with looking at the characteristics of the Greek economy and its performance is the scale of informal economic activity, which is extensive in Greece and multi-sectoral, I think, and again, a lot of probably quite good and interesting economic activity, which is just very difficult to measure. There'll be a lot of bad economic activity as well, but it's, I think, it'd be interesting to hear your views on how that might skew some of the findings or the way that we analyse the characteristics of the economy.
For the first 2 points, full agreement. For the third point, on informality, in cryptic language, it's over here. I mean, sector vulnerabilities here. Informal sector is very much, you know, related to resilience problems due to exogenous shocks. And so we deal with that in the book.
Maybe just on informal, so one of the, in fact, let me, I'll just zip back to some of these survey results about stuck. Never mind. If you can because when I the survey results I skimmed over it, it wasn't very easy to see, but one of the questions we asked in the survey is the extent to which practices of competitors in the informal economy, whether that's an obstacle, and actually in many of the countries where the EBRD operates, it's one of the biggest problems. It sometimes stands out as the biggest problem. If you're trying to operate legitimately, you know, you can't compete with these firms that are not paying taxes and so on. Yeah, let me quickly go back and just show you. But interestingly, for Greece, so it's this row along here. So actually, nearly half the firms said it's not an obstacle. And it's maybe about a quarter which are saying it's either a major or a very severe obstacle. So that's, I mean, I think it would still be higher than it would be maybe in the UK or France and so on, but maybe not quite as bad as some other countries where it's really awkward.
And you also fully agree with the first point about sort of the real estate.
Yes, no, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Could I, in a sense, I was looking at the very final chart which Anthony threw up, which was a relatively complex chart with quite a lot of headings even in any single box. And I was reminded when I was looking at it at an event that I was at, and quite a number of us otherwise were here relatively recently, where we had somebody talking about the ways forward for Greece. Now, I won't mention any names, except that this person made a number of propositions, in a sense about, you know, so I look at your action points, which are going on, and I think about the action points that were mentioned there. And the suggestion here was, there are two action points in particular I want to concentrate on. We've got to collect taxes much better than we are collecting them, because if we can't do anything. And the other point was, I think, we have to have better accountability, in particular accountability in government. And perhaps a subsidiary point, which was also came from a particular point here, was we have got to do something about reversing that brain drain, because that brain drain is highly both the management of firms and the management of government capacity and all these things which have to do with whether we can coordinate, whether we've got markets that work, etc., etc. So it was a very simple set of action points that we were presented with. But in the end, it kind of does come back to the point which is there all the way through what one was talking about, even though perhaps as presenters you were less kind of enthusiastic. Vasilis, in his comments at the end, perhaps coming from a certain political economy, a school, or to some extent, and to some extent I share some of those views as well. There are some very, very deep-seated problems which, to an extent, got to be glanced over, and I think Vasilis was probably right. And one thing which came up right at the very end, which made me sort of think, yeah, those problems are extraordinarily severe, and obviously people are aware of this, is that we talk about in 2015, the bank got certain new responsibilities. This was, you know, suddenly it was people who used to be lenders into the system suddenly became borrowers out of the system. That was Greece and Cyprus. Now, I've spent quite a lot of time looking at the Cyprus case, much more perhaps than the Greece case. But I found it fascinating that Peter sort of said at the end, well, we had this 5-year program which was supposed to sort of sort out something. It was for 5 years. Cyprus got out of it for 5 years. We've had to extend it another 5 years for Greece, which suggests.
It was the same with the adjustment programs, anyways.
Yes, I mean, there is something very, very deep seated. Are simple solutions 1, 2, possibly 3 versus a whole list of things here? Is that, you know, kind of, I have difficulty understanding the details of some of that final column. In a sense, when I was listening to something 2 or 3 weeks ago, I could kind of grasp what was meant by 2, 3 very, very simple points. And those very, very simple points were that perhaps the reason why Cyprus got out after 5 years of Greece didn't.
In defense of your action points.
Absolutely. I mean, let's say that you engage in a conversation with a policeman, okay?
I'm a good economist.
And one thing is to focus on the fundamentals. A second thing is to, you know, depart from the fundamentals and provide some guiding principles for strategy. I don't see a contradiction between the first and the second. In a way, the first inspires the second, and the more coherent the link between the first and the second, the more productive policy advice might become. So I don't think we disagree. I mean, in our analysis, the fundamental problems of the Greek economy are not in the background, are at the forefront, because they are the inspiring core ideas of what we put together. When you see this complex McKinsey-type slide, this is addressing the policy community. And you need to engage with the policy community in the language that they speak. This is not an academic exercise. This is not an academic paper. This is the way to engage with the policy community. So,
maybe a couple of remarks. On Greece and Cyprus, I think having been involved in both countries, I think the problems of Cyprus, Cyprus had a crisis 2013, 2014, but it wasn't on the scale of Greece, and I think the problems were nowhere near the scale of Greece at the time, and it was quite striking. I mean, one thing, it's a much smaller country, of course, but one thing that struck me was the, when starting to go to both countries a lot, that the quality of public governance seemed much higher in Cyprus than, than Greece, and I think that made a big difference in terms of getting their act together and sorting things out. And indeed, by 2020, not needing the EBRD anymore. The other thing I want to say, so a couple of people mentioned brain drain. It is something we haven't really talked about too much in the book, but I think it's an extremely important issue. And I was struck some months ago with Dimitris here, my colleague, we were in Athens for a few days. We had a bunch of meetings, including at the central bank, the chief economist, who was talking about unemployment and how it's come down and so on. But he said, you know, according to their calculations, Greece is actually, it's going to be very hard to get unemployment much further down, but actually the natural rate, which one would think is normally, we think it would be around 3% or something, but in Greece it may be 8 or 9%, because, you know, at both ends of the labor market spectrum, companies are continuing shortages. So at the low-end services, especially at the height of the tourism season, so on, businesses are struggling to find workers. But also at the higher end, they're really struggling to find these skilled people who, partly for the reasons Anthony was explaining, that, you know, Google is, you were alluding to all the Googles hoovering up the best quality, but that is a real problem. And it did come out even in the survey a few years ago that an inadequately educated workforce, because a lot of the best educated people have left, and that's holding back. Now, how to get people back, and I'm sure we have some of the well-educated young Greeks here, that's going to be hard. You need to get into this sort of virtuous circle where high growth is then leading to and much better life, you know, the country is then maybe attractive for people to go back. That's happened in the case of Ireland, you know, in the 90s and most of the 2000s, you know, the country has started recording very high growth rates and people went back, you know, to the country, immigration.
Thanks. Let's take a question by Kevin.
Thank you for the presentation. I look forward to seeing the book. It sounds very important. One small comment building on what you've just been saying and then a question about reform performance. I read last week that the country in the European Union with the highest number of unemployed ICT graduates is Greece, which rather surprised me. But that's just a comment. To go back to the question, which actually Professor Lisi's first main question, which I like very much about reform capacity. If you take the period, the 5 years since the third bailout finished, the adjustment program finished, we focused on performance rather than capacity. What would be, you think, the three most significant reforms in terms of market regulation and the economy that the government has made, and how would you assess their significance overall? Because clearly there is a lot of debate about the extent to which the current government is proceeding with reforms. Well, in your judgment, what would be the three most significant reforms which they've made in the last 5 years?
You mean during the crisis or post-crisis?
Yes, since 2018. What I have in mind, previous to 2018, is the external constraints. The bailouts, hands have been tied. So if we're talking about reform capacity, then there's an external constraint which is somehow redefining the reform capacity. So let's take the 5 years since the external constraint went. What would you say were the three most significant reforms in terms of market regulation, and how would you judge their overall significance for the economy? So let's look at the actual performance rather than the capacity.
The first comment is that the last 5 years have been really characterized by the COVID event. So for almost half of that period, the Greek government was trying to incentivize survival. So this is the backdrop of whatever we discuss about, you know, market reforms, business-oriented market reforms in the Greek economy. Point number one. Point number two. I think there were very good intentions with concentration. So they were given a lot of incentives for mergers and scaling up of firms. But because of uncertainty, we haven't seen that really tested in the market. Point number one. Point number two, I think that incentives for firms became more transparent than they used to be in the past. And third, there is a targeted effort for export orientation. Interestingly enough, there you see government support, but also the banking sector stepping in. So, very briefly, and you know, I was not prepared for this kind of detailed question, I would say there's a backdrop. For 2 years, very few things happened. And then we have seen all these issues. One challenge to be considered is that the government tried to become more focused in its policy agenda for the business sector, digitalization green, but again, we haven't seen that much evidence of, you know, real results for that also.
To add a few things, I mean, the BRD's first project in Greece was being part of the recapitalization of the four systemic banks, and I think, although I alluded to still some fragility in the financial sector, there have been important changes in financial sector reform, and the fact that NPLs have come down from nearly half of all loans down to single digit levels is...
presumably because that came during the adjustment period.
No, a lot of it has been since 2018. I mean, they had started to come down, but 2018 the rates are still very high. So some of that has to do with legislative reform and solvency law, servicing companies to operate and so on. Then, I mean, privatization, I mean, with, you know, I think there have been some important deals since the end of the program. That I think is important. I think the green agenda also, I mean, it was encouraging, you know, the commitment to close the lignite mines by a certain date. Now, that was then delayed, and we understand the reasons for that. But I think this government is genuinely committed to, you know, exploiting green opportunities. Greece does have opportunities in that area. And I think there's a growing recognition now of the importance of that, not least because of some of the climate catastrophes that have hit Greece in the past.
Yes, I suppose that I can just briefly follow up on the last point. In terms of reform commitments, etc., I wouldn't take the green aspect as being so convincing. If we're comparing a period of hands being tied, no hands being tied, pre-2018, post-2018, the loads of money has been thrown at Greece. To express a commitment to a green economy, therefore, is relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
It's the other aspects where have they confronted some of the inbuilt structural constraints of the economy that you've been elaborating here? That doesn't sound the most convincing aspect. I take the point about COVID and the delay. Providing the incentives for mergers and concentration, okay, that sounds a bit more convincing. But if we're trying to create a direct link between the constraints of veto points and the difficulties of reform capacity and what this government has been doing, or governments have been doing since 2018, we obviously focus on some of the points that you mentioned rather than perhaps the others. But thanks, that's very helpful.
If I may add, there's a very important macro dimension because we talk about economics. I think what is really important is the rebuilding of credibility. And there are two dimensions. One is that the Greek government political system managed to communicate the fact that Greece is in a safe path for the next 8 years. And then, to the credit of this government, they managed to recover from the damage that the Folifoli case created for foreign investors.
Yes.
So, corporate governance was enhanced and all that, and that was communicated. And slowly, the market recovered from this very serious problem of credibility and accountability. So I would say the backdrop is first COVID, but also the gradual rebuilding of credibility through these two lines of intervention.
Thank you.
Let me take another question.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I have two questions. The first is more specific and practical, and the second is more general. Starting from the more specific, I would like to point on the green economy and the green economy and the adjustment priorities for energy transition projects. And given that you mention quite often about adjusting in relation to exogenous shocks so that the economy is prepared, I mean, from a practical perspective, I'm not convinced because having worked with microdata in Greece and generally from my understanding, it's a large majority of the companies are actually small and medium sized, right? So if we think what are actually the cost that they have is the electricity that they buy, right? So this is not something they can change themselves, because if the electricity market works in the way that it works, and we've seen quite often with that, like regardless of the investment of what's green energy in Greece, Greece having one of the most expensive electricity, so you cannot really skip that, you cannot actually do something as a business to actually reduce that cost. And that goes to the regulatory, to the centralized government perspective of how you reform the electricity market. So there's nothing really you can safeguard your company. And if that happens again, because it's a long process at the European level of how we decentralize the electricity market, you cannot do something. And even if I think of capital intensive companies that they use fuels to produce something, still you need a lot of capital investment towards new technologies, and still you cannot really disentangle from the use of fuels that are expensive and they come from the Gulf Coast or from others, or LNG or anything. So pretty much there's nothing you can do at the state that Greece is, this is my understanding, and I would like to see how you think about this, because if we discuss about decentralized chains, about small, medium size, it will happen again, and there's nothing can be done at this point. And in the more general perspective, the second part of my question, you mentioned about brain drain and attracting back brilliant minds from abroad that they want more higher salaries and work in a better environment. In order to have that, we need companies that actually are high growth ones. They are export oriented. They produce something that is being competitive abroad and brings in them. And Google, Pfizer, they came to Greece, they are doing this, there are a few of them. If we want to have more of them, then we need first to reduce the number of small-sized enterprises, and maybe we might think about reorienting Greek innovation, not generally about, let the market do it. Maybe we need an industrial strategy policy that actually directs how the country will evolve and where will focus, where will, there is a big debate on whether we should have an industrial strategy or not, but it seems the only way to actually boost specific businesses that can become bigger and export intensive and then attract people that can go and work, because Google cannot hire everyone.
I'll stop you here because we have to leave some time for the speakers to answer.
So, yes, sorry for expanding. I find it really interesting, and I would like to elaborate again on this.
Okay. In 40 seconds.
We try to keep it simple. I mean, in this slide, we don't refer to energy market because we know one or two things about that, and it's a minefield. So what we say here is that if you commit resources to certain energy projects and then the market conditions change, you should have the liberty and the provision to rearrange your funding priorities. This is what we are saying here. On brain drain, we debated that, and we we decided to drop it from the presentation because we felt that we don't have, you know, something sensible to propose in a way. Instead, we had a lot of sensible things to say about the underutilization of fixed capital in Greece. Because if you are a Greek citizen and you go to neighborhoods of Athens or Thessaloniki, you will see real estate, industrial factories being abandoned and all that. This is something that can be solved tomorrow in a way. So we try, in the spirit of practicality, to be very, very specific in what we're saying.
But can I close by asking, I think I'm doing a favor, you know, so I'm following what Thaddeus was saying. I'm not debating for that. Do you think that the transformation of the Greek economy towards a sustainable, functional economy kind of, you know, it requires, necessitates that it also moves to an economy with fewer and bigger firms? So away from the SME model and the kind of family business or micro business? That's not politically very tradable, but okay, I think we have to stop here. Thanks for the questions from the audience, but please join me in thanking the speakers for this. And before you leave, may I announce that we continue next week with another seminar on again on the Tuesday, 6 o'clock. Cyprus and EU sanctions, macroeconomic impacts and policies for sustained recovery. May not sound very technical economic, but I think it will be quite economic topic. We have another seminar also on the 19th of March, but in between, on Thursday next week, on the 14th, we have the governor of the Bank of Greece, Yannis Tounalas, giving a public lecture here at LSE at 6:30, I think, yes, 6:30 on the 14th of March. You can find more information about how to register on our website, and you're more than welcome to join us. Thank you.